Hi, everyone. I'm Big Al with Country Music News International, and I'm the host of the Big Al and Sandy Radio Show. We're going to talk today with Paul Brewster. Paul Brewster has made many contributions to bluegrass music. He has worked with Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder, the Pinnacle Boys, the Osborne Brothers, Knoxville Grass, and has done so much more, including his family. He recently recorded on an upcoming album called Heroes and Friends that's going to be released on Bonfire Music from Daniel Grindstaff. The single that came out is called Forever Young. That single is going all through not only acoustic, Americana, bluegrass music, but it's going through rock and roll and country music as well. Even Rod Stewart's fan club made a comment about the single Forever Young with Paul Brewster's lead voice on it. So, Paul, it is time for you to tell everyone who Paul Brewster is. That may be coming new to bluegrass and acoustic music or any other kind of music that has heard your voice but not your name.
Okay, that'd be great. I don't want to tell you everything, but I'll tell you a little. There's good and bad and everything, of course, but I'll be happy to tell whatever you ask.
So let's go back to around the 1940s. There was two big shows at that time in Knoxville, Tennessee, the Cass Walker Show and the Midday Merry-Go-Round. So your dad and your Uncle Ray was a duet that played on those shows. Kind of give us a good background story on what went on in your family.
Uncle Ray started, and my dad started when, I think Ray was 2 years older than my dad. And he was born in 1924. I think my Uncle Ray was 2 years older. So he was born 22, somewhere right in, I'm not exactly sure, but I know my dad was born 24. And their sister, Betty, started playing the piano. And they kind of started there. That's where they kind of learned the music, through her. And I don't know the insides and outs too much, but that's how they started. And I don't know exactly what age they started. They probably started at, 10 years old, 12 years old, somewhere right in there. And I should have found out all that information, but that's kind of been a Brewster thing. They didn't answer a whole lot of questions. But
yeah.
They had a few songs that they had recorded on radio. They didn't do anything on record, as far as I understand. But there was some stuff that they had recorded together as duet, a brother duet, when they were younger. And I don't even know what label or what radio station it was. But I did hear my Uncle Ray for the first time. Actually, I heard him for the first time a few years ago. And somebody sent those recordings to my Uncle Bud. And I got them through him, and it was my dad singing tenor, and my Uncle Ray was the lead singer. And they did pretty popular songs back then, and they sung duets together. And that's kind of how it started with them, and they just went on from there until, of course, my Uncle Ray got killed in 1948. So they started around, I guess, probably the late 30s, 38, 39, 40, 41, somewhere right in there, and ended up going to Nashville with Danny Bailey, the Bailey brothers. Well, it was Danny Bailey and my Uncle Ray and my dad, and I'm not sure who else was with them exactly. Bud probably would know better than I would there. But they did go to the Grand Ole Opry, and when the Solomon Judge was there.
Wow.
And They sung a song for the Solomon Judge, and he stopped them right in the middle of their singing. Wasn't, I guess, 100% happy with it. And as they were leaving, he heard that there was a brother singing act in the band, and he wanted to talk with them. And so I think my dad and Ray sung something. I'm not sure even what it was. But they went back, and then they had a scuffle at the Opry House somewhere or another. Anyway, they were young guys. I mean, what, 24?
Yeah.
22, 24 years old, somewhere right in there. And anyway, long story short, they went back to Knoxville. They lived in Nashville just for very little time, I think, and went back to Knoxville. And Dad and Ray went to work with Kaz Walker. So, but they could have been it. They could have been at the forefront of, I guess, of country. It was, of course, still hillbilly music at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 42, he didn't become bluegrass till 45 with Earl Scruggs and Lester and Bill Monroe. But it was just it's a hillbilly music is what it was called. So it was great music. And there were several other great duets. Bill Monroe and Charlie Monroe, of course,
mm-hmm.
they were a duet. And that's kind of what it was. It was country music. That was the country music right then. That's kind of where it started with them and different other acts around and bands. But they were all hillbilly. They weren't bluegrass. They weren't really bluegrass at the time. So that was all new stuff. And of course, the Carter family.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they started. And of course, after my Uncle Ray died in 1948, my dad kind of lost a little bit of interest in it. And then my Uncle Bud, of course, started playing the banjo because he got intrigued with the banjo. Of course, Earl Scruggs did that. And so they started playing bluegrass music. And they played, of course, with Carl Story and did a lot of recordings with Carl and did a few of their own as the Brewster Brothers with Bud and my dad, Willie G. And that was around 1960. So between 1955 and 1960. And my dad retired in 1964. And because of the Beatles. The Beatles cut out a lot of country music and bluegrass music at that time.
Yeah.
All the kids went to rock and roll, and that changed it. Anyway, my dad got out of the business early for me because I didn't really start playing music myself until, I was probably 1970, 71 when I learned, and then I got into a bluegrass group myself with the Knoxville Grass back in 1975. So I started late, but we did duets at church with my dad a little bit when I started learning how to play and to sing and stuff like that. But that's my Uncle Ray and Dad's story as far as I know it. I don't know a whole lot of intricacies other than that. That's about all I know there.
So once again, we're talking with Paul Brewster. Paul, you joined Knoxville Grass in 1975, and you was with them for 4 years up until 1979. You joined the Osborne Brothers. How long did you stay with the Osborne Brothers, and how in the world did you get hooked up with them?
10 years. Well, I missed about a year and a half. I went back and worked with my Uncle Bud with the Pinnacle Boys in 1982, during the World's Fair. They had the World's Fair in Knoxville. So I played there all year with my Uncle Bud and went back with the Osborne Brothers. Bobby had heart surgery, and Sonny called me and asked me if I could come and sing with him on the road while Bobby was recuperating. So I went back and sung. I couldn't sing Bobby's part that well, but I did what I could. Anyway, Bobby finally came, he recuperated and finally came back in the end of 82 maybe, or the first part of 83. I'm not sure exactly the date, but I stayed with them and went back to work with them in 83, I guess, somewhere right in there. Of course, I started with them in 79 and left and stayed with them till 1989.
So, Paul, you ended up, for the first time really, touring the world with the Osborne Brothers, right?
Yeah, I did. Absolutely. First time I'd ever, but I went to Canada with the Pinnacle Boys. The only time I'd ever been out of Knoxville. And we went to Nashville and played the Opry one night with the Pinnacle Boys.
So playing with the Pinnacle Boys, did you get a call from Sonny Osborne, or did you run into them and they said, hey, how would you like to sing with us? Kind of how did that all take place?
Sonny had called me and I went to rehearse some songs with them in Nashville. And I got the job there after I went up to rehearse. And we did two or three songs, Pathway of Teardrops, I think. And Bobby, we stopped right in the middle of the song. We were right in the middle of doing Pathway and Teardrops, and Bobby just kind of got up, got his hat, and just put his mantle in the case and just kind of left. And I looked at Sonny, and I said, "Is everything okay?" And he looked at me and said, "You're in." So that was my introduction to the Ogden Brothers. It didn't. So we should just be on the bus at midnight. I said, "Okay." And anyway, I met them that night. I went back to Knoxville, actually, and I met them on the way through. I think we were going to North Carolina or somewhere. Not sure exactly where it was, but that was my start with them.
So after you left the Osborne Brothers, there were some blank spaces in between career time. We'll get more into joining Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder, but what went on with Paul Brewster in between the Osborne Brothers and Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder? And I know there's probably a long line of things you could talk about, but kind of give us an idea about those years.
Well, I left Bobby and Sonny in 1989, April or May, somewhere right in there. And I was living in Hendersonville at the time, and I think Keith Whitley had just died.
Yeah, that's a year Keith
and
Whitley
that
passed.
That struck me real hard. I was friends with Keith, and had some things I was fixing to do. We were fixing to write some songs together. And anyway, that never transpired because I actually got a call from a friend of mine. He said, "Yeah, have you heard the news?" And that was the day I heard that Keith had passed away. And that just kind of bummed me out. And I got a little bothered with that and lost my interest in playing music pretty much. And I moved to Naples, Florida, and was playing a lot of golf at the time. I was decent, not great, but I was a decent golfer. And I was going to get my card in golf and get my PGA card.
Really?
And start teaching and playing a little bit. And so that's what I did. I left Nashville and we moved with my wife and daughter to Naples, Florida. Sister and brother-in-law lived down there already. My brother-in-law was working down there. And they talked to a guy, and I got to rent a condominium down there on the golf course when I got down there, and went to work at the golf course down there that I went to. And so everything worked out real well for us. So we moved down there and got involved in that for about a year and a half, something like that, until my son Aaron was born down there. And I worked there for about a year and a half. And I moved back to Knoxville in 1991, something like that, and got in the car business and sold cars and mobile homes with my dad. So I did a lot of that for a little while. I wasn't very good at it, but I did. I tried. I couldn't show them the price of the car. I still couldn't sell it, so I wasn't very good at it. but that wasn't very good for me. But it was a challenge. And then I worked with RPS Package Company, which is FedEx now. They were bought out by FedEx, RPS, Roadway Package Systems, and did that and did pretty well in it. I was driving all over the place, in Sevierville and Knoxville and Newport and different towns like that, and did that for about a year. And then Ricky called me in 1995, and I said, "I guess I'll try to come back to Nashville." And so we moved back to Nashville in 1995, and I went to work with Ricky. Actually, my brother and I went to the Opry one night. I'm not sure who got us in, but anyway, we got in to the Opry that one night, and he did have a tape of some stuff I had done and gave it to Ricky. Ricky got a hold of it, and we left and went back home that night. And Ricky called me and asked me if I could, I'd want to go to work with them. And we were, he was still doing country music at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I, he gave me, gosh, I guess he gave me a list of, I don't know how many songs, 30, 40 songs. So I rehearsed those songs for a little while and went back up and rehearsed them with him. And it worked out real well. It started in 1995, I guess summer of 1995. Our last, my last date with him was in Palm Springs, California.
So that works out to about 25 years with Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder. But here recently, you got a call from him. And didn't they give you a recognition type award at the Bijou Theater there in Knoxville? It was kind of a surprise.
Well, he asked me, they were playing down there at the Bijou. I think we'd played the Bijou before when I was with him. And in the Tennessee Theater, we played over there too, right across the street. But he asked me if I wanted to come down and do a song or two or whatever. And I said, sure. And that was last year, August of last year, I think. I went down and did a couple songs with him. Yeah, that was great. I enjoyed that. Boy, they got a great group now, too. And, of course, he's always had a great group.
So also I want to make mention about you, Paul. And everybody, we're talking with Paul Brewster, and a little bit more to come as we get into his history. But you recorded a album around 2003, and I believe it was called Everybody's Talking.
Yeah, I recorded that in Nashville there at Ratchet Ricky Studio in Hendersonville. So, yeah, we did that one there.
So now we're up to present day and what is going on with you, Paul. Lead vocal on Forever Young, Bonfire recording artist Daniel Grindstaff, the album Heroes and Friends that's going to be released, Dolly Parton on vocals. Give us a story how that all came about for you.
Well, what we did, Daniel had asked me, actually I talked to him a couple years ago, actually, and it was first mentioned to me, doing a, just singing for me. We didn't have a song picked at the time, I don't think. But anyway, he asked me, and then when I came back to Knoxville, he asked me if I would do a song for him on his Heroes and Friends, which is a great album, a great project with different people on it, and it's so good. But anyway, getting back to the song, it was he asked me if I would do a song called Forever Young. I said, I don't know if I know that. And he said, well, he sent me, is the Rod Stewart song? I said, oh, yeah, I remember it now. Of course, I remember Rod Stewart when he did Maggie May. That was back in the 70s.
Yeah.
But I do remember Forever Young now that he mentioned Rod Stewart. But he sent me Rod Stewart's version of it. And I couldn't do it in E. Rod Stewart did it in E. He sang high.
Mm-hmm.
And he sung it in E. I said, well, if we move it down to D, then I'd love to give it a try and see. Because I love the biggest thing about the song that I love to start with that he sent me was the track. The track was so good,
mm-hmm.
with Andy Lefkowitz and Trey Hensley and Kent Blanton playing bass. And that was all his own at that time. But the track was so good. I said, man, this is really great. I said, I hope I can pull this off. So I went in that day to record it and got my vocal down. It turned out really, really well. I was real happy with it. And we weren't done with it then because we still had to get the fiddles on it and the dobro. And some other little things on it, and I was watching a documentary on Dolly, doing something with the show Dumplin', that she did, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, everything she does is great, and of course she sung with me on my first record too, which was great. And anyway, I was watching it, and I said, you know, it would be good to have harmony on that song. And I called Daniel and I asked him, I said, Daniel, what would you think if I don't know if we can or not, but we'll try to get Dolly on this to sing harmony. If she would send the track to her, I think she'd love the track. And he said, well, Dolly would be good on anything. So, anyway, long story short, we sent the track to Dolly, and we probably thought that she wouldn't, or we thought that she wouldn't do it right away, even if she did do it, and because she was in the middle of her rock and roll album, and she was in L.A. and back in Nashville and back and forth, so we probably won't hear from her for a month. And we heard from her about 5 or 6 days later. She had said she would do it, and she sent the track back and had done it. And it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And she did such a great job on it. And that's basically how it transpired. And everything about the song just got better and better and better of what we liked. And we worked on it, putting this in it or taking this away or adding this or doing that. And it just seemed, everything just seemed to work. So when we got done with it, we said, gosh, this is great. And sent it back to Dolly. She loved it. And she loved it. And so that's how that transpired. Everything worked out. And it's just been a great song. I just loved the track before I even sung it.
Yeah.
It's just such a great track. So, but when I got the track down that I wanted, that was where I was worried about, is what I did. That it worked out. Stephen got such a great sound in my vocal. I said, gosh, this is going to work, I believe. So anyway, we think it worked out great. So that's the way that transpired.
So there is that great single, Forever Young. Gosh, Paul, it has been so great to talk to you, and I appreciate you taking the time to do so. By the way, do you have any music that's going to be coming out? Are you working on something before we finish up?
Well, I have a gospel album I'm fixing to cut. I don't know exactly the date. It'll probably be sometime this winter. But I've been wanting to do this actually before I did the last album I did. And so I'm going to get this. I've got pretty much the songs down that I want to do. That's my next project, is to do a gospel album. I've been threatening or procrastinating to do this record for a long time. But we're about ready to sit down and take care of it, get it done.
Good deal.
So hopefully we'll have it by the first of next year.
Well, Paul, I can tell you, we'll be looking for that album and much more from you. Everybody, once again, been talking with Paul Brewster, a little bit of history, a little bit of background on him, and that great album is going to be coming out on Bonfire Recording, Heroes and Friends from Daniel Grindstaff.